Thank you all very much. It's my pleasure to be here on this really exciting and interesting panel. I hope that my presentation can be equally interesting. So I'm going to be talking today about marital sexual behavior and HIV risk in sub-Saharan Africa. So just a little background on marriage and HIV in Africa. Although, you know, marriage is commonly thought to be protective against HIV in sub-Saharan Africa, some research has shown that it actually may be a risk factor for HIV. Research on marriage and HIV in Africa, however, has produced some contradictory results that haven't been entirely resolved. Many studies suggest that a substantial proportion of men likely acquire HIV outside of marriage and then infect their bride. So basically, men have partners outside of marriage and then infect their monogamous wives. But some studies suggest that many young women might actually enter marriage already HIV infected and then perhaps infecting their male partners, partly because it's been observed that in sub-Saharan Africa, women in the age range of 15 to 19 have very high HIV infection rates, and often men marry very late. So there's some thought that perhaps women are actually coming into the marriage HIV infected. There's also research that has shown that both early and late marriage is associated with higher HIV risk, so it's not exactly clear which one is actually the more prominent association. And there's also been recent studies of serodiscordant couples, which suggest that women may be more likely than men to introduce HIV into marriages, since, in fact, it's been found that often women are the discordant person within the marriage. So in terms of other drivers of HIV infection in sub-Saharan Africa, research has identified this notion of sexual concurrency or having multiple sexual partners that overlap in time as an underlying driver of HIV. But in general, there's been limited data on the cross-national prevalence of concurrency. There's just not really good information to compare across countries. And in addition, the role of concurrency in the spread of HIV remains contested. So there's a number of skeptics of the concurrency hypothesis that question both the sufficiency of the empirical evidence, but also some of the ideological motivations to support the theory, which I'll talk more about in a second. But in general, in Africa, thinking about marital concurrency, previous studies have looked at concurrency overall, but haven't really looked at this notion of marital concurrency or having extramarital partners within the context of marriage and its potential contribution to varying rates of HIV, apart from the contribution of concurrency overall. So marital concurrency, especially in the context of Africa, may be thought to take two forms. One would be polygamy, which is a form of kind of formal concurrency codified within marriage, which is, as we'll see, actually quite prevalent in sub-Saharan Africa and not quite as prevalent in other parts of the world. But also extramarital sexual relationships, which I call informal marital concurrency. So although polygamy as a form of marital concurrency likely increases risk for HIV, research on polygamy and HIV has actually produced contradictory findings. So ecologic studies generally find that polygamy is protective, that places that have more polygamy have lower rates of HIV, but other studies have shown that, at the individual level, have shown that polygamy actually increases risk for HIV. And at the same time, although both extramarital concurrency and polygamy might be riskier than serial monogamy for individuals within these relationships, we may have reason to think that extramarital concurrency should be even more risky, at least at the population level, given the sort of informal nature of these relationships. And this is just a very... it's sort of an illustration of this sort of theoretically. So on the one hand, for extramarital partners, you can see, I wish I had a pointer, sorry, but where you have networks that are highly interconnected, you can see that there's, in theory, HIV could spread very rapidly through those highly interconnected networks. Polygamy, on the other hand, you could imagine, you know, different networks of polygamous relationships that are interconnected and, you know, HIV spreading rapidly throughout that network, but then being sort of trapped within that network and not moving further throughout the network. And serial monogamy, you could imagine, mainly HIV staying confined within, couple dyads or smaller units. So returning to this idea of, a questioning of the kind of ideological motivation of the concurrency thesis, there have been some studies that question whether we should even be continuing to look at sexual behavior in sub-Saharan Africa, and is there something wrong with even implying that there could be that differences in sexual behavior within sub-Saharan Africa, which these sexual explanations are viewed as kind of pathologizing and essentializing African culture. So, for instance, Stoyers and Stillwagon have argued that concurrency is grounded in Western preconceptions about African sexuality and have called for an end or at least a moratorium on research on sexual behavior in Africa. So I think that that's a little extreme, but there is research that has found that African populations have fewer lifetime partners, but actually what the concurrency concept is meant to address is this idea that you could, in theory, have very few sexual partners, but still over the course of a lifetime, but given the way that they overlap in time, you may still be at greater risk for HIV, and that, in fact, your own HIV risk has less to do with your own personal behavior, but has to do with the behavior of your partners and your partner's partners, so that we actually have to know something about the network to really understand an individual's risk. So previous research, much of the previous research on sexual networks and HIV, particularly concurrency and HIV, has been based on a lot of modeling. So there's not too much actual empirical evidence, as I said, about the different rates of different forms of concurrency across different countries. Probably the most comprehensive analysis to date is a study by Tanzer et al. That combined network and contextual data to model individual-level changes in HIV status over time in an HIV-negative cohort. So this is, really using a panel approach. And they find no additional effect of concurrency over and above the prevalence of having multiple lifetime partners. But there's some limitations to the study in that it's confined to a relatively small rural area in South Africa where marriage rates are considerably lower than the rest of Africa. So there's some issues potentially with external validity. And it's also, I think, difficult in the context of these studies to think about how should we treat lifetime partners, because often we don't know whether lifetime partners were those partners actually concurrent? Did they have other partners? We're not really able to make the proper assumptions about how those lifetime partners might have contributed to increased HIV risk. So in terms of the data source that I used for this study, I used 16 demographic and health surveys from sub-Saharan Africa. These are nationally representative population surveys. They are cross-sectional, conducted on a semi-annual basis in different countries, and some of the more recent demographic and health surveys have added HIV biomarkers. So they, take blood samples and were able to actually have an HIV biomarker that is linked, that can be linked with a series of social and demographic variables, including information about the number of partners that somebody's had in the past year, as well as the number of wives or co-wives that an individual has had. So in terms of the methodology for this particular paper, I assessed the prevalence of extramarital concurrency across countries with different HIV infection levels, and I use a multi-level model to assess the relationship between living in an area with higher rates of formal and informal concurrency and link that to individual HIV risk. So I'm looking at really three levels of analysis: the individual level, also the subnational level, so regions within countries, and then I have 16 countries that I'm looking at. This is just to give a sense of the sample sizes across the different countries and the level of HIV prevalence on the end. So it ranges from Senegal, you know, and Niger, which have about 0.7 HIV prevalence, to Swaziland with almost 25% HIV prevalence, and that's based on these national samples. So the main dependent variable is HIV serostatus, and the main independent variable is informal and formal concurrency. So this is having an extramarital partner in the past year for both men and women, and formal concurrency is measured as men with two or more wives and women with one or more co-wife. And so the assumption in terms of using extramarital partners as a measure of concurrency is that if you're married and have an extramarital partner, that this partner is overlapping in time. But one thing that I want to clarify is that I'm not primarily interested in the individual level relationship between an individual having an additional partner, but I'm more interested in the prevalence of these extramarital partnerships and the effect that that has on an individual, regardless of their own sexual behavior. And I think it might become more clear why that's important in a minute. I also control for a number of variables, including, I don't think I included all of them on here, actually. For some reason, I left some off, but wealth, age, area of residence, religion, and also male circumcision at the regional level, since male circumcision has been found to be associated with lower HIV risk. So my main hypotheses are that individual HIV risk should be higher in regions with higher rates of extramarital partners compared with regions with higher rates of monogamous unions, and even after adjusting for individual level sexual behavior. And also that individual HIV risk should be lower in regions with higher rates of polygamy compared with regions with higher rates of monogamous unions, also after adjusting for individual sexual behavior. So this is just looking at different countries, at the prevalence of different types of unions. So we see that, you know, monogamy is sort of the majority in pretty much every country, although there are certain countries, particularly in West Africa. So the countries, I guess, to your left are more the kind of lower prevalence West African countries, and there tends to be higher rates of polygamy in, you know, these predominantly Muslim countries. And then towards your right side are the higher prevalence Southern African and East African countries, which tend to have higher rates of monogamous unions, lower rates of polygamy. And then extramarital partners are kind of spread across countries. But Ivory Coast and Cameroon actually have some of the highest rates, along with Lesotho, of extramarital partners. And this is just showing, you know, some unadjusted linear relationships between HIV prevalence and the prevalence of extramarital partners. And basically what we can see is that across all these different countries, that having a higher percent of individuals in extramarital partnerships is associated with higher HIV prevalence. There's generally a positive relationship in most of these countries. And then this is just showing HIV prevalence by the prevalence of polygamy or being in a polygamous union. And we can see here it varies a little bit more across countries, but in a number of countries there seems to be more of a negative relationship between HIV prevalence and the percent of the population in polygamous unions. And then just the results from the multi-level model. So what we see here, first of all, just looking at the regional-only measures without any controls, we see that being in a polygamous union, the percent of the population that's in a polygamous union is associated with lower HIV risk or lower odds of having HIV, whereas the percent of the population in an extramarital partnership is associated with higher individual odds of having HIV. And so then in the next model, we enter in some controls, and we find that that relationship stays pretty stable. And finally, looking at a model with individual sexual behavior included, we still find essentially the same results. And in terms of the individual level relationship between sexual behavior and HIV, this is somewhat interesting. We find that indeed, as some of the literature has found, that people that are in a polygamous union have an increased risk of HIV. So this is, although at the population level, polygamy seems to be protective for individuals, at an individual level, individuals in polygamous unions are at higher risk compared with individuals in monogamous unions. And in terms of extramarital partners, again, having an extramarital partner is associated with a higher risk of HIV compared with being in a monogamous union. But the important point is really that even accounting for these individual level behaviors, the contextual variables still remain significant. So, you know, regardless of whether or not you have an extra partner, living in an area with more extramarital partners increases your risk for HIV. So to summarize, as hypothesized, the odds of having HIV were higher among individuals living in regions with more informal concurrency, but lower in regions with more polygamy. And that, again, is even accounting for individual level marital concurrency. So this can sort of start to rectify these contradictory findings about the relationship between polygamy and HIV. So polygamy does indeed seem to be protective at a population level, but at an individual level might still, you know, increase your individual risk. In addition, compared with monogamous unions, both having an extramarital partner and being in a polygamous union were positively associated with HIV infection, controlling for covariates. So I think I pretty much already mentioned this about the paradox that individuals in polygamous unions had a higher odds of HIV infection, but living in a region with more polygamy was protective compared with regions with more monogamy. And by contrast, living in a region with more extramarital partners was associated with an increased risk for HIV, even accounting for those individual sexual relationships. So we can explain this paradox by suggesting that this can actually simultaneously be true. And likewise, living in a region where extramarital partners are more common increases risk even among monogamous individuals. So I think that that's really important. It's, again, it's not about your own sexual behavior. It's really about the sexual behavior of those around you. And, you know, using a multi-level model, you can kind of start to get at that. So there are a number of limitations to this study. The data are cross-sectional, with information on concurrency limited to the past year, whereas present HIV risk is clearly shaped by past behavior, and it just becomes a little tricky. How do we account for that past behavior in the right way? And the measure of extramarital concurrency is both limited by social desirability bias. People might not feel comfortable reporting their number of extramarital partners, and also on information about whether past relationships were, you know, serially monogamous or concurrent. We don't know that much about past relationships. And an additional limitation I'll note too is that we don't, in this particular analysis, we don't know if the individual's partner has another partner. We just know if that individual has a partner. So there are other data sets as part of the DHS, couples data sets, where you could actually know whether an index person's partner has other partners. And so that might be another way forward to look to sort of examine some of these individual level associations more. In terms of one sort of policy implication that this could potentially inform, there's been a lot of recent attention to this question of, you know, should we focus on primary prevention or secondary prevention, with primary prevention being reducing multiple partnerships in the general population versus secondary prevention within long-term serodiscordant couples. I think what this research points to is just that there's this a critical interaction between these two, between transmission that occurs both within and outside of marriage. So I'm not sure that we can really, this should be a trade-off. I think that we may have to do both really simultaneously. So that's it. Thank you very much.